Welcome to Women's Work. Thanks for tuning in and getting to know some women whose names may not be that well known, but certainly should be. Our show aims to change that one interview at a time. I'm your host, Leslie Gray. We are going to deviate from the usual straightforward interview podcast format to do something a little unusual. We've just installed an experimental apparatus brought to us by John, our sound designer extraordinaire. I guess the local research facility here called the Jalen Meadows Stevens Institute was tossing out some obsolete equipment and were gracious enough to lend it to John for us to play with. So we've installed a gizmo called a Tesseractotron chronoreduction apparatus that is supposed to, amazingly, allow us to communicate directly with the past. Unfortunately, the apparatus is only compatible with Zoom, but we got a sub to Zoom Prime, and, well, I admit, I'm a little skeptical, but John always knows, so when he proposed this to me, I thought, okay, let's see what happens. So today we've done all the preparatory setup to try to conduct an interview with a pioneer of green innovation, the 19th century American inventor, Mary Elizabeth Walton. As early as 1879, Mary Walton patented a device for reducing the expulsion of soot and smoke from various industrial smokestacks and chimneys, pollution that was greatly affecting the health of residents in New York City. And in 1881, she patented an even more noteworthy solution to the abundance of noise pollution created by the newly installed elevated railway. Well, we're still novices with this Tesseractotron, but we have definite coordinates, and if I can adjust this, this very weird tuning gauge. Is this right, John? I am turning it to the left end. Okay, got it. It's getting there. Bingo.
How do I speak into this thing?
Hello? Oh, Miss Walton?
Excuse me. Are you the one who sent me this odd message?
Okay. Let me adjust. John, which one? This? This looks weird, but... Okay, this is a very strange readout, but...
Are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello, Miss Walton?
Yes. I can hear you now.
Oh, that's great. You're coming in loud and clear. This is fabulous.
So... I'm to speak into this cribbage board.
Yes, our apologies, but the Chrono Reduct app scans for a suitable linkage, and your cribbage board seems to be the communication conductor it picked.
And you can hear me?
Miss Walton, speak into the top of the board, please, ma'am.
Is this better?
You don't need to be that close, Miss Walton.
Is this better?
Perfect. That's awesome. Just, we can hear you fine. How am I? Can you hear me?
Yes. This is remarkable. Now you say you are from the future.
Yes. Thank you so much for being here.
And you're doing an article for the future.
Well, not exactly, but that's close. We are so excited to interview you, Ms. Walton. I want to just jump right in, if you don't mind, since I don't know how long this connection will hold.
So curious. All right.
You are famous as an inventor, Miss Walton, and for two amazing inventions that dealt with dreadful problems of pollution in the city of New York.
Yes, thank you.
One that helped reduce smoke.
Oh, terrible belching black soot and poisons into the air we were breathing.
A smoke-reducing machine.
Smoke burner device.
Ah.
It essentially eliminated the horrible fumes and black clouds emanating from the smokestacks of locomotives and factories.
It was a big problem in New York?
It was killing people.
Ah.
They had that deadly fog in London. Well, we were definitely on our way to duplicating that massacre.
You saw people dying of the fumes?
I was dying from them. It was everywhere. Your eyes hurt. Your skin was flaky with residue. There was black grime in your nose and on everything. You couldn't not be breathing it and feeling its effects.
Post-Civil War, there were suddenly many more trains and factories.
In the 1870s, yes. They sprung up everywhere. And suddenly, All was smoke, gas, vapors, and ash all the time.
Oh, so you saw this giant problem and decided to do something about it.
I have always solved problems. I found I was very good at analyzing and determining the mechanisms for fixing things. When I was a girl, I created little constructions for organizing cookware and pantry items so you could make sure things didn't get broken. Devices to keep boots clean when entering the house, harnesses for keeping clothes separated and bustles stored properly. Useful items like that. I've always loved tinkering to improve things. So, when I realized the scale of the pollution problem and the horrid consequences, I felt I had no choice but to try to solve it for myself and for others.
Ah, and so you invented to improve people's lives.
I'd like to think so. Pollution, in all its forms, destroys health and contributes to nervous anxiety. It's a proven fact, despite what disbelievers say.
Oh, there are people who don't believe that?
So many people who refuse to see what is plain as a nose in front of them. It's quite clear. Scientists that study the effects of pollution say it. You have to be utterly without a brain to think otherwise.
There are, sadly, a lot of brainless people everywhere.
That is true. But to deny doctors, health experts, it is beyond me.
So your solution to the fumes from the smokestacks was this invention that you patented in 1879, correct?
Yes. The patent was granted in 1879, U.S. 221,880A.
Ah, it reduced the emissions from the smokestack. Please explain how your device worked.
Well, the sparks and vapors are captured by the device installed around and on top of the smoke box of, let's say, a locomotive. A collector tank of water is below, and all the sparks, foul gases, and vapors, as well as the unconsumed products of combustion, are moved along by the cool air into the water tank, so they do not enter the outside atmosphere. The dangerous toxins in the tank are then flushed with the water into the sewage system.
Oh, and so the device is built into the locomotive?
Yes. For trains, it surrounds the smoke box. But for a factory, can you see my diagram from the patent?
I can't really display it.
Well, it's very difficult to explain my inventions without the diagram. Would you like me to draw it for you?
Well, I'm afraid I'd be unable to share it with anyone listening at the moment because we're a podcast.
Pardon?
It's only audio. I don't have a visual component to the show.
Well, that's a bit difficult.
I believe your patents are on file, correct? And I can certainly bring them up and share as a PDF for those interested in it.
A PDF?
Actually seeing your invention, both inventions, but I just can't make that happen this moment. If I use the laptop, it compromises the bandwidth to work the Chrono Reduct app. Oh, that's just future jargon, no worries. The important thing is that I can get your diagrams to folks who would like to see them.
It's not quite as clear without the diagrams, and my explanations are there in the patent as well. But as long as those people you are talking to will see the drawings eventually...
Yes, I promise. Everyone listening to this show will look at your drawing.
Ah, well, as long as there is no confusion about how it works.
It's absolutely ingenious and very straightforward. You are known to us as an important contributor to the history of environmental awareness and protection of public health.
Oh, I am humbled. Perhaps you in the future have found ways to eliminate pollution altogether.
Well, let's say the things you dealt with have been greatly reduced, yes.
Oh, that's reassuring.
But we've created other kinds of pollution that have not been so visible and on such a large scale that they went unchecked for a long time,
And
we've pumped too much exhaust into the atmosphere, so the Earth is on the brink of heating up to the point of irreversible damage to the entire planet.
Oh,
But let's get back to you and your achievements. You were able to patent this device under your own name.
Yes, that I insisted upon for myself and the sake of other women inventors.
During your era, wasn't it sometimes easier to utilize either a male pseudonym or to have a man apply for things in the woman's name?
That may be true for some, but not for me. I am entirely opposed to that kind of dishonesty.
Oh, you think it's deceptive to be...
I think... Now, I'm going to be plain with you because you're also a woman.
Sure.
So, I am... was married.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, don't be. Actually, his dying is not significant, but his being dead is quite.
I'm afraid I don't quite...
My apologies. Let me explain. While my husband was alive, I had an idea for a very useful device, something that I will not elaborate on now. It's very much like an old scab that I don't want to bleed again. But I was very excited about this device because I knew that it would make a great difference in many people's lives, and I was sure that no one had created a solution to this enormous problem. So, after I had drawn up a sketch of my device, roughish, but absolutely complete in concept and detail, I made the mistake of showing it to my husband.
Oh, did your husband patent the...
Hardly the brain to do that. With his unique brand of dismissive ignorance, he showed it to a friend of his, who then went and patented it under his name.
Oh, this friend stole your idea?
Without a shred of remorse. Oh, such a good friend. My dim-as-dishwater husband couldn't fathom that we were being cheated out of the profits of my invention. He was so tickled that our idea was being used by the general public, and his friend was making so much money. The concept that an idea derived from a woman could be of value just never occurred to him. Everything I invented was always just funny, so sweet. He never took any of it seriously. So, I have determined that women must be the masters of their own ideas by firmly putting forth their ownership of them, and there should be no man in it.
At all?
None, whatsoever. In fact, my son had even tried to convince me to patent the locomotive noise dampening device under his name.
Why?
He was afraid that people would start characterizing me as a, quote, strong-minded woman, especially when they learned that I had already patented the smoke-reducing device, and it had gained international attention. The English were quite ecstatic about it.
Well, I would think your son would be proud of his mother's accomplishments.
My son, unfortunately, didn't belly flop too far from the family tree. I told him, when you make your own inventions, then you can have your name put on it.
Ouch.
Simple truth. My son, well, shares his father's slightly narrow view of things. I was very fortunate because my father had no sons, but he believed in educating me as if I were a son, and he spared no pains or expense to this end. It was this education that was of the most benefit for me to open my mind to comprehend the world and be able to focus on the intricacies of a mechanism or a situation and peel it apart until the workings of it became quite clear. Education is absolutely key for developing the ability to think without drivel or neuroses. It's appalling to think how many inventions and innovations are not afforded us because half the population is viewed as a waste to educate.
If you had a daughter, you would see to it that she went to school.
My dear, the proof of the issue is that my son expected his education, and it was the equivalent of dressing a pig in a ball gown for all he did with it. He was entitled, so he squandered the gift. As a girl, I was not entitled, so I cherished it with all my might.
Oh, and look what you were able to do.
To some, that is not something a woman should be proud of. But I am.
Well, as you should be. So your smoke reducer was used in England?
Yes. I was given a trip to visit one of the factories that was making use of it. They printed in the paper that it was one of the greatest inventions of the ages.
Oh.
I was very much treated like royalty, amazingly, in England. England, which was just 100 years before our surest enemy.
Oh, did it make you feel...
traitorous? Not at all. Oh. They are people just like us. Good, bad, rich, poor, just like us. And dealing with belching filth from smokestacks, just like us, for longer than us. I was actually struck by how much the same we were.
Really?
Humans all have to breathe. We all have to drink water, eat food. Poison is bad for all of us. My invention to deal with the poisons coming from all these chimneys applies wherever there are these threats to health, which is now everywhere on Earth, I suppose. The English, well, they speak English. Sometimes difficult to understand, but then possibly we Americans are hard for them to understand. I haven't been around the world, but I imagine that people everywhere, in every country, are just people, plain and simple.
Plain and simple indeed. So next you decided to tackle the noise pollution coming from the rail cars.
Those elevated cars that suddenly sprung up in the late 70s. Teeth rattlers, we sometimes call them. Every hour, bone-shaking racket. Your whole body would be unhinged. My boarding house was right up against the 6th Avenue line, and I am sure that every dish, cup, and spoon clanked and clattered loud enough to wake every dead man in St. Mark's Cemetery.
It was an obvious problem.
Oh, everyone was complaining about it. Everyone was suffering. So, when everyone is hurting, it becomes a priority.
So this is why Thomas Edison tried to tackle this problem.
Oh, that Mr. Thomas Edison. He certainly made everyone aware that the problem was needing to be tackled.
Oh, how do you mean?
He was the best vaudeville act while he was conducting his experimentations. I don't know if he was partially just performing or really struggling with the problem. But he fluttered around on the railway just like a circus act for about 6 weeks, putting his ear to various locations in the car, hanging his head dangerously out of the window, then, one time, biting into a piece of wood to feel the vibration. Very dramatic.
Did he succeed in finding anything?
Apparently not, because he disappeared from the project.
Oh.
I felt rather sorry for him, because it was obvious to me that he was looking for attention, and got it, but he abandoned solving the problem.
Really? He gave up? After only 6 weeks?
Yes. Doesn't reveal a lot of patience, does it?
No, not really. I would think that for inventing anything...
Indeed. Not just inventing devices, but for determining anything. Women practice patient investment of time constantly. Collecting water, cleaning rooms, dressing children, sewing buttons, cooking dinner, all with analysis of the situation and what needs to be done to find a solution. I could not understand how Mr. Edison could be hailed as such a great scientist and not show the warranted tenacity required of science. Perhaps women are so used to focusing this way that when there is a real challenge, we are better practiced at summoning up the necessary fortitude.
Here, here. And so how did you discover a solution where Edison failed?
Well, I started to ride the cars myself to find out what the actual source of the noise was.
Oh, did you walk around and put your head out the window, too?
At first, well, the first day, I did variations of that. No wood biting. Uh-huh. But then I quickly realized that I had to stand on the back platform to really narrow down where precisely the racket was being created. Mm. But when I tried to go out there, the conductor tried to shoo me off. Then he he started to get very irate that I was continually standing out there when he had told me not to.
Well, did you try to explain?
Naturally. I said I was conducting experiments on the noise, trying to find the source of it. And, well, as has sometimes happened, he had that specifically male deafness to female voices.
Oh, do you find that you encounter...
Yes. I actually ran into this often in school, where there are some people, not only men, but predominantly men, who do not seem to register anything you say, as if you are not speaking the same language.
They don't hear you because you're a woman.
I'm a woman. They don't hear me. I'm saying something a bit too complicated for them. They don't hear me. Mm. I'm speaking when they are supposed to be in charge. They don't hear me. I'm saying something unflattering of them. They don't hear me. I'm saying something to them in front of their peers. They don't hear me.
So it sort of boils down to...
I'm a woman. They don't hear me. Yes.
Of course.
So, this conductor could not, and really, I believe he was simply impaired. Mm. He heard nothing I said. I explained each time, 3 times, what I was doing. And each time he told me I could not be there on the platform and to go back inside the car. Finally, he brought a supervisor who happened to be a man with functioning ears, who had been informed I was going to be looking into the noise problem. So then, I was free to stand out in the din to my heart's content.
So you stood on the platform to investigate where the sound was coming?
Well, by then, I had already determined where the majority of the sound was coming from. So I had a good idea where to start my experimenting.
Oh, and how long did that take you, there on the platform?
Oh, I only rode the rail car for 3 days.
3 days only?
Well, by then, I had all the observations I needed. I could then go to my basement and do the necessary experiments.
Your basement was your laboratory.
I had set aside the space for these kind of fabrications, trial models, and such, which I learned were so essential for designing a fully workable device. The basement was my own, yes, laboratory. I could be there for hours or late into the night if I was just thinking or drawing.
But not if you were hammering.
Hammering is always eventual, but I try to not disturb the borders, if at all possible.
So you built some model or...
Well, I had to determine what kind of material would dampen the sound best and how to implement it onto the track. It was the track. The track going through the strut that was the culprit. Hmm. So after I realized that it was the track as it went through the strut that made the metal... clatter and clang as it passed. That was the point of the sound. The amplification of that clang through this open space around the metal, if I could dampen that, it would diminish the sound. So, I tested different kinds of materials that would absorb the vibrations of this clang and came to realize that if I just placed essentially a wooden shoe around the track braces on the strut, weatherproofed with tar on the outside, stuffed with a cotton lining and filled with sand, it absorbed the vibration, reducing the sound to a negligible amount.
Brilliant. You created prototypes.
Trial models, yes. Several were installed, and then it became obvious that it worked. To see the men in the railway committee as the train passed the section of track where the struts had been muffled... It was glorious. There was no doubt that the noise was reduced by an immense amount, and each of them, you could see the realization on their faces when they looked at each other. Then they looked at me like I had 2 heads for creating such a miracle. But it was genuine admiration. Worth it for that moment, absolutely worth it.
And so you succeeded where the great Edison failed.
Oh, I was grateful to him. He actually made my invention much more sensational because he had given up. The New York City Metropolitan Railroad did not hesitate to purchase the rights to my invention after the trials were successful.
They paid you a good sum?
$10,000 and royalties forever.
Ah, $10,000, that's $250,000 here in our time. Wait, royalties forever?
Well, those never were clarified, but I did receive a yearly sum subsequently. But that initial payment was so necessary. It would have been quite a dismal existence had I not secured a large sum from some invention. I ran the boarding house to keep above water, but it was hardly a self-sustaining situation as a lone widow. And that torturous cacophony as the L ran down 6th Avenue, well, it was like the train had thrown down a gauntlet for me specifically. It was necessity to take up the challenge.
Since you needed to find a solution to more than one problem.
Yes, exactly. I had no other choice. Invent or be engulfed.
Indeed. This is a question we're asking all of our interviewees. What is your opinion of women's work? I mean, how would you define it? Do you think that women should be considered the equal of men in work?
Well, women have been working since the dawn of time. There's a lot of chatter about cavemen discovering fire. But think about it. It had to be a woman who discovered fire. Hmm. Who really needed the fire in the first place? It was dark, and the men were such sloths or worse after the sun went down. The meat was raw. The women, obviously from sheer necessity, must have observed the flame burning, noted its properties.
As you do in your experiments with materials.
Exactly. I am sure the first fire was wielded by a woman, and the caveman just appropriated it.
She told him how to use it.
Yes, precisely. As with most things these days. Women's work is usually just getting the job done when disbelievers eventually move aside to let it happen. But I don't think men could do all the things that women do naturally. Clearly, they cannot give birth to children.
Obviously.
All the rest of the work a woman must do and does do, even if she is inclined not to want to, we still do it. And successfully. I am curious. Do you mind my asking?
No, please, please.
Are my devices still in use there in your time?
Actually, they dismantled the elevated railways in favor of a subway system.
Subway? The underground cars?
Yes.
Oh, my. Do they transport people very far, traveling under the ground?
Yes, they traverse the entire city with over 660 track miles and over 450 stations, from the Bronx to the Battery, Queens, and Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Across the river?
Under the river. The subway is essentially the public transportation in New York City now. I'm fairly sure that anyone in the city has had to ride the subway if they want to get anywhere.
My.
Oh, does that disturb you?
I'm just amazed that after all the degradation of the air, the land, the darkening of so many neighborhoods, and the decline in health of so many citizens, that the elevated trains didn't survive. While the poorer neighborhoods suffered in their shadow, the wealthier parts made money and were never encroached upon by their grime. Perhaps somebody's greed struck them down, as somebody's greed erected them in the first place, as somebody's greed probably caused the crisis you mentioned earlier about the planet.
Yes, greed and complacency. Which is why you are a hero, Mary Walton, for seeing a pressing problem and not giving up until you found a solution. We here in the future thank you for your tenacity and for being willing to help others with your ingenuity and being a real role model for young women all over the globe.
If there are still women in the future who will seek solutions and realize them, then I am sure your situation will be resolved. And the Earth, dear me, will be saved.
Oh, how I hope you are right, Ms. Walton. I so hope you are right. Thank you again for talking to us today. Hello? The connection is dissipating. Thank you, Ms. Walton. You take care.
Oh, switchboard. So curious.
Women's Work is a production of Tri-Pi Theater and its collaborators. Our themes today are environmental studies and sciences, problem solving, the scientific method, public health, engineering and industrial studies, women's studies, and of course, American history. We are grateful to our sponsors and listeners, you, oh, and you too. I'm Leslie Gray, your host, with John Navori, our sound engineer. Today's special guest was the fabulous Diana Tanaka as Mary Walton. Thanks for tuning in to Women's Work. Encourage a girl to succeed. Until next time, do good and do be humble.